I think this better be my last one.
Okay.
This Dark Nealon lived up in Faiston, and I should say that Mr. Farr founded the telephone company here. It's the father of the lady that owns now. And anyway, this Dark Nealon called up one of his neighbors, and they were having some sort of a spat on the telephone, and Dark was doing a lot of name-calling and swearing and whatnot, and this conversation went on for a while, and this lady down that was operator down to Waitsfield Village, Stella Newton, broke in the conversation and said, "Mr. Nealon, I'd like to have you hang up now because there are other people that would like to use that line, and you've been talking kind of strong here anyway." And so Dart, of course, he was mad anyway, and he was a little mad that she asked him to hang up, and he said, "Well, you can take your goddamn telephone and shove it right up your hind end." And but he hung up, and when Mr. Farr came in the office, she told him what Dart had said. So Farr, of course, was then on pins and needles, and he went right up to see Dart, and he said, "I hear you've been giving my operator down in Waitsfield a hard time." And Dart said, "Well, maybe I did talk a little rough, but," he said, "I didn't mean anything by it." And, well, Farr says, "I'm going to have to take your telephone out." And he says, "Because we can't allow that sort of thing to happen." And well, Dark says, "Go ahead and take it out." But he says, "Could I make one last telephone call before you take it?" And Farr says, "I guess so." And so Dark called up this Stella Newton down at the office, and he said, "You know what I told you could do with that telephone?" And she said, "Yes." And he says, "Well, you better get ready, because Farr's be down there with it in a few minutes." That we were talking about Smalley a little while ago, and Pearl Blair going up to get that screen up to Frank Turner's and getting loaded up with hard cider and so on. And this Smalley worked for Henry Brooks in the mill there in Warren. And it seems my oldest brother, Denny, and Ernest Brooks, his cousin, were working there too. And they were boarding somewhere up near Smalley's, and they were walking, of course, faster than Smalley, and they came by Smalley and on the way home after work, and Dennis said, "Why don't you come up and go swimming with us, Smalley?" Smalley says, "I wouldn't go in that goddamn cold water for $100 and Dennis said, "You wouldn't?" And he said, "No, I wouldn't." And so Dennis grabbed him and put him right up on his shoulder. He was a big, strong young fellow. You know, he weighed 200, and he took this Smalley, which was a kind of a small man, put him right up on his shoulder and walked right along. And just above Smalley's house, there was a path that went down to that brook where people used to go and dip in, and he didn't bother to take off his clothes or anything. He walked right out in that, right up to his neck, and dropped Smalley in that water.
That was your oldest brother?
Yeah, my oldest.
Tell me the names of your brothers.
The oldest one was Dennis.
And sisters.
Pardon?
And of your whole family.
Yeah, Dennis was the older. Then Elmer, the little fellow, was next. And then Ethel, my older sister. And then Raymond. Then Eva and Thelma and Myrtle and I. And of course, Myrtle died just before I was born. She had appendicitis, and they didn't know how to do anything about it, and she just died.
And your mother and your father was Almond.
Mm-hmm.
A-H
Gove.
A-H.
A-H. Almond Howard.
A-L-M-O-N.
A-H.
Yeah, I'm a win. H for Henry.
Henry? Was it Henry instead of Howard? Well, I'm not so sure. Anyway, my older two brothers were always together, and they played ball together and all that. And so my folks were down at the barn milking, and they told Dennis to go up to the house and split some kindling and get a fire going so they can make breakfast. And he and Elmer went up with him, and Dennis says, put your foot up on that piece of wood and hold it there, Elmer, and I'll cut your toe off. And of course, he didn't mean to do it any more than anything in the world, but the axe was sharp, and he came down and he cut his big toe right off. And I had quite a time about that, of course, getting him to the doctor and stopping the bleeding and all that. But
And in those days, it was tough.
Yeah.
I mean, they must have had to hitch up a
horse. I had to hitch up a horse, you see, and get him to the doctor.
And where was the doctor?
In Warren Village, 4 miles away.
Did he pass out?
I don't remember that they said he did. He might have, of course, but I know they had quite a job healing that up, and he couldn't let him walk on it at first or anything.
Mm. Gosh, your other brother must have felt awful.
Oh, he felt terrible. Always did afterwards. I like to tell about Fred Elliott because he was an outstanding man in the community and all. And I also like to tell a little something about his sons, which they weren't like Fred. They weren't as good men as Fred. They thought they were wonderful, but and this sort of bears it out, that George, the older one, was at Norwich University, and he was home for the weekend, and Fred usually kept a couple of sows, and he'd raise pigs twice a year, and then he would keep those pigs. He'd keep all those little pigs and put them down in the basement and feed them and then dress them off. And he had markets in Montpelier and wherever you might think around here. And Ralph Buzzell, my brother-in-law, went to help him butcher those pigs on this weekend. And George was home, and George didn't come out to help much with it. But finally, he meandered out to the barn, and the pigs were in the basement to the horse barn. And down in the lower corner, the slop had settled down there, and it was quite a little late down in the lower corner of the west end of the barn, under the barn. And So they'd caught and killed 3-4 pigs, so the pigs were getting a little wary, you know. And so George says, "You aren't having very good luck catching those pigs." He says, "I could show you how to catch those pigs." And Fred or Ralph, one of them, said, "Well, that's the thing to do. You go ahead and catch one of them." So George jumped right on one of those pigs' back, and the pig went down into that slop hole and threw George off right down in there, you know, and he just went into that thing all over that slop. And he got up, and he wasn't in any mood to show how to catch pigs. He took off for the house to get cleaned up.
Was there a time of year to butcher pigs?
Yeah, they used to butcher pigs. All the people that I knew of along around the 1st of December. You see, the cold weather was coming. No one had any freezers at that time. You butchered and you froze up some of these parts, and you kept them frozen all winter and then went out and got them and you smoked your hams and that sort of thing. And they butchered them in the fall of the year.
And did they watch the moon when they butchered?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure.
Some people did, and some didn't.
Well, some people watched the moon when they would plant their crops. You know, if they planted it in such a phase of the moon, then they wouldn't do any different than that. They believed that was the thing to do. So probably they butchered at some phase of the moon too, I would think, because I know they were real anxious to plant their crops at the right time.
What were the, do you remember what the phases were when they would?
I believe it was full of the moon when they would plant, and it was the full of the moon when they would try to harvest. I believe that was right, but I'm not absolutely sure about it. I know my father would say sometimes that we aren't going to mow down that piece of hay because it might be a perfectly nice day. He said, we aren't going to mow that piece of hay today because there's a storm brewing. And he could tell when the storms were coming when he was older because his rheumatism, he called it, would start, his joints would start aching when a storm was coming, and he wouldn't have any part of having any of his hay mowed down until that cleared up and his, until he felt all right again, then we'd go ahead and mow.
You told me, I think, that you were part Indian at one point.
Yeah, I think I'm at least a quarter Indian. My grandfather on my mother's side was born on an Indian reservation, and I didn't know that until about a year ago. My cousin in Bellas Falls told me about it, and she said it was a fact, that she knew it was a fact. I knew that my father's mother was an Indian lady, and...
Now, where was she from?
They were from Lincoln. They lived in Lincoln, my father's mother and father.
And was she Abnaki, or...?
I don't know, because my father never talked about it. I think that people didn't talk about if there were Indian, if there was Indian blood in them. I don't think they were proud of it back in those days, whereas now you'd be more proud to... I'm proud to be to have Indian in me. Not that I think I'm any greater than someone else, but I've got qualities about me that I think are descended from the Indians.
Absolutely.
And